So perhaps you want control. It takes you probably the other end of the spectrum of the 501c3 universe, which is the private foundation. That is a separate box, 501c3 box. It is an entity. It can hire people, fire people, operate, not operate. And it generally can avoid most tax on its income, other than a small 1.39% tax on its investment income and typical UBTI issues. You get that benefit of control, but that comes at the cost, of course, of all those fun excise taxes and regulatory issues and restrictions, et cetera, that can sometimes be a real pain, right? And this goes again to this trade-off that we're going to talk about of, boy, I really can do whatever I want to control this thing, but now I'm dealing with all these other impediments to how I want to operate it. Then there's that nice, happy place that lots of people try to wind up in, which is the 501c3 public charity, right? That is a world where you have that separate legal entity, that box that is a 501c3. You can hire people, you can operate things, you can give money away. You're not merely an advisor to the particular organization. You can set up certain types of control rights. But of course, there are strings attached to that, right? You have to make sure that you actually qualify as a public charity. That can be tough, unless you're running one of what are, you know, the per se public charities out there, educational institutions, hospitals, churches, et cetera. Most people have to find a diverse source of funding in order to qualify as a public charity. The benefit there, though, is you get a lot of the perks of the private foundation world, but without a lot of the regulatory hassle of the excise tax regime and some of the restrictions that come with making a private foundation kind of a pain to operate. They also get more beneficial tax treatment as a donor when you're putting assets or cash inside a public charity. So these really are kind of a happy place that people like to operate in, with, of course, key limits that are no stranger to the folks on this call: political activity, lobbying activity, right? Public charities can engage in a little teeny bit of lobbying activity and no political activity. And that's often an impediment that poses a dilemma. And so we need more options. What are more options that we can put on the table? The social welfare organization, or the 501c4. Also a separate box, can hire people, fire people, operate things, have its own books and records, that could be control rights, can hold assets. It is generally tax exempt. Of course, you don't get deductions for putting assets into the 501c4. That is a drawback. But unlike the public charity and the private foundation and the donor advised fund, this is where you can start getting into the world of lobbying activity, political activity, supporting opposing candidates for office. There's also generally less regulatory oversight of a 501c4 than there is a 501c3, because the notion is these are social welfare is not the same as charity, and charity is a narrower bucket that is more highly regulated because we are providing tax benefits. Those assets are supposed to go to a certain specific charitable class. Because those issues are not present with a 501c4, they tend to have a lighter touch, both from a tax perspective on the regulatory front, i.e. excise taxes, but also at the state law level, right? Most states do not regulate their social welfare organizations the same manner that they regulate their charities. It's probably worth pausing for a note just a little bit on the history here of why these have sort of creeped up and popped up and proliferated so much in the last few years. And at least in my view, that's largely been driven by tax, right? I think tax and certain political shifts in the country. Tax-wise, prior to late 2015, there was a concern that if you transferred assets to a 501c4, transferred cash to a 501c4, you could be subject to gift tax. That's a bad result. Gift tax is very expensive. Now, the IRS generally wasn't in the habit of enforcing that, but I think it was enough to make some people concerned about transferring any material amounts into 501c4 organizations. Slipped into a piece of legislation at the end of 2015 was a repeal of the gift tax on transfers to social welfare organizations. in addition to C5s, labor organizations, and C6s, business leagues and whatnot. I kind of opened up a floodgate of a lot more funding coming into 501c4s. Yes, you might not get a deduction, but now you could transfer potentially significant appreciated assets to a 501c4, sell those assets tax-free in the 501c4, and do lots of the typical impact things that you'd want to do without a lot of the regulatory hassle that could come with a 501c3. And for a lot of folks, that was worth a trade-off where the deduction either wasn't worth very much, or they had maxed out on deductions to the point where it wasn't going to provide any additional benefit. So these have become much more popular recently, particularly in the political space where you can engage in a lot of activity now as a 501c4, saying, exercising your First Amendment rights. Some of you might have known that from a case called Citizens United. So these have really picked up in popularity. One thing to note, though, is that while we normally think of the gift tax system and the estate tax system as being integrated, in the sense that if I do something that isn't subject to gift tax, I probably don't have an estate tax problem, 501c4s really have not accomplished that unification yet. There are some quirks in the law there, and folks should be mindful of that if you do transfer significant assets to a 501c4 and the proverbial bus happens to hit you, there can be some serious estate tax exposure there that is worth navigating beyond the scope of this call, but want to always like to flag it to make sure people realize that they're not completely off the hook for the transfer tax system.